Welcome back to Christian Family Matters, where your Christian family matters. I'm your host, Robin Johnston, and we're back with our expert, Larry Bellotta, who's continuing to enlighten us about the terrific marriage-saving program that he has and how the chaos kid effect impacts individuals and families. Larry, in the last segment, you introduced us to the chaos kid and how chaos programming follows us into adulthood and ultimately into our marriage and family life. I know our listeners are really interested in hearing more. I know I certainly am, especially now that I realize I'm married to a chaos kid. Larry?
Yes. So at the last segment we did, we talked to a guy who was raised in a chaos home. He had a father with a temper. Today, I want to talk about Debbie. Debbie's going to be on this call with us. And what's interesting about Debbie is she is not a chaos kid on the chaos to purpose scale. She is a purpose kid, raised by a great, great dad. And this is, in Debbie's case, I want her to talk about the role her mother played and what happens in your childhood really sets up the programming in your brain of how you're going to reproduce your life. And the big secret about this is we just don't know that these programs are driving everything that we're doing. I'll give you a quick snapshot of this. I was on the phone with a woman this morning in Japan. Okay?
Wow.
Now, she's an American, all right, but she's in Japan. And I'm talking to her this morning, and I ask her the question about the chaos kid. And I explain the chaos to purpose idea. And this is an African-American woman who was raised in an upper-middle-class home. And she ends up marrying a boy from the ghetto. She said, when he brought me to meet his mother, I was afraid of getting out of the car. So here's a girl who's raised in an upper-middle-class home, and I pushed to really tell me about how your father was in your childhood. And it turns out that her father was a very hardworking guy, a very strong disciplinarian, but he turns out to be very abusive to his wife. And so he abused her, he hit her, and she saw that for 10 years of her childhood.
Wow.
So the message is very simple. Here's how you need to be treated as a woman. You need to be abused. Okay? Now, she doesn't know that because she's an intelligent woman, college educated and everything. And so she knows intelligently and consciously that this is a bad thing. But the power of these programs, because you don't know they're there, they guide you to who you will create normal with. And what does her childhood say? Normal is to be abused. That's normal. But she herself is not she's not her programs. She doesn't realize it.
Right.
So who does she marry? She marries a guy whose father was a philanderer. He cheated on his mother on a regular basis. And do you know what he did when he married her? For 25 years, she writes me, she says, for 25 years, my husband has cheated on me, but I've forgiven him.
Wow.
See how sad this is? You forgave him for cheating on you for 25 years. Why did this couple stay together for 25 years while he was cheating on her for 25 years? Well, it's literally perfectly matched to their childhood programs.
Right.
He is programmed to cheat on who he's married to. She's programmed to be abused by who she's married to. And she's only 25 years later waking up to it slowly now. So I explained this to her, just like I'm explaining it to you, and she said, I have never heard this before.
To be repeated over and over without realizing it, how that programming works. It's amazing.
So the reason I wanted to have Debbie on is because Debbie is not a chaos kid. Debbie is a purpose kid. And I want her to talk a little bit about her mom. And how her father was, you know, moving all around the world, and her mother would dutifully pack up the children, pack up the house, sell the house, do everything, and literally move the family from place to place. And she did it like an efficient machine. But here's a girl who has programming to literally structure everything and make everything structured, people, places, things, money, everything. Okay, and I wanted to talk a little bit about her second marriage, because she's got two sons from her first marriage, and talk a little bit about how her programming as a purpose kid, in other words, very good self-image, feels good about herself, but she has this mother who literally compartmentalizes everything, structures everything, and how that affected her life, and how the fact that Debbie didn't see it. So, Debbie, are you on the line now?
I'm here.
Great. So you heard my little introduction about you're a purpose kid. Talk about your... your first 10 years and why you're a purpose kid, because you located yourself at 100%.
I did. I think I'm a 100% purpose kid. I grew up in a family with such normality, or my normal, I guess, but dinner together every day, chores together every day, vacations together every year, sometimes twice a year. We were a unit all the time. We did simple things like create those family traditions where we had roast on every Monday night and a big Sunday breakfast. People were nice and kind to each other and motivating.
Now talk about your dad.
The fact that we moved around the world every four to six months.
What's your dad do, Debbie? What does your dad do?
My dad helped build refineries. And so he was the go-to guy to start them up or shut them down. And that sort of pushed us around the country. And it took him about 4 to 6 months to start one up, and then we were off to the next place.
So tell me about how your mother literally got the family moved, how that happened.
Yeah, I think about it today, an amazing CEO of our family, because Dad would leave about 3 or 4 weeks before us and arrive early and start while four kids in tow, two in diapers at one time, and she would sell a house or terminate a lease. She would get shots for small children to go to different countries, pack everything. Many times there were bottles filled with milk still in boxes, and we'd open up the surprise when we got to our new place. Every time we got to a new place, she would walk us up and down the neighborhood to meet the kids. She did Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, Brownies, karate, ballet, jazz. We all had
what a woman.
Grades.
Amazing.
She is.
I want you now we've established, you know, why your mom had to become this great CEO. And she did it without complaining, right? She kept it a positive experience. She's a really amazing woman, right?
Right. I have great memories.
Now, talk about how you ended up with that program in your brain from your mom, how you ended up treating people because of that programming. What did you discover in our process of learning about
that? That was one of my favorite things to learn about myself, was that that I get business done, and that was my favorite line. Let's get business done, and then we can play. Get business done, and then we can play. I would say it over and over again to almost everybody I know.
Did you know it was because of your mom that you got business done?
I had no idea. This is my favorite thing to learn about myself, but not only until I met you did I learn that.
So now let's get business done, and let's go to your first husband, who you have two sons with, and tell me how you manage this guy, and what kind of childhood program does he have on the chaos to purpose scale? Where is he on that scale?
You know, I put him right in the middle, half chaos and half purpose, and so he gets torn in half quite a bit. But he had a father who never swayed from what he spoke. So his spoken word was his handshake, it was his signature, and there was no budging, regardless of what his dad thought. Was if he learned it was a bad idea, his dad never went backwards and unshook his hand. So there wasn't apologies there, or there wasn't going back and admitting to wrongdoings. It was what was said is done. Mm-hmm. Now, his mother, on the other hand, couldn't draw a straight line if she tried, literally or figuratively. And so I think there was some mixed messages. He definitely felt like rules did not apply to him because he bucked his dad's system and accepted his mom's system.
So his mom was a bucker, an unconventional person, go the opposite way.
Yeah, draw your own lines.
Did she struggle emotionally with issues and personally?
She is a dramatic woman, and she does feel things. And when I think back, if I was to attach a label to her, I tend to attach Gossip Girl with her.
Okay.
Yeah, and so it was always about finding something that was personal or private, and she really wanted to just exploit that, or I don't know about exploit, but she felt better when she knew everybody's problems.
All right, now how did this affect your first husband?
There were no rules, and I think you guys know by now that I like structure. and rules and boxes and labels and sticky notes. And he has no rules. If he blew through a stop sign, it was the cop's fault. If he wrote a bad check, it was the bank's fault. If something didn't go right, someone was around to blame. And that's not enough structure for me.
Now, this is he marries a highly structured woman. Rather than taking after his father, who's a handshake is a handshake, do what you say, follow through, he takes after the program. In other words, his mother has programmed him, not his father. And so he's programmed by his chaotic mother. And so he marries you, and he brings that programming into the marriage, but you don't know this, do you?
I don't know it.
You don't know you're marrying a chaos kid, because
no,
if he took after
a hard,
his...
dark, handsome, you know, cowboy, that's what I married.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Let's just get physical here, right? So you don't know about what you're actually marrying internally, and it turns out that he's programmed by his mother, not by his father. And, I'm always asking about the father, because the father is where we get our emotional security, unless this person, daughter, son, is programmed by the mother because she has a much stronger connection, a stronger influence. And if she's troubled, like my mother was an alcoholic, I didn't take after my mother. I took after my father, the teacher, who was a gambler and a risk taker. So I don't have my mother's alcoholic tendencies. I've got my father's, risk taking tendencies. So here you have a strong imprint from your mother as this highly organized, highly structured, this is the way it's got to be. You marry a guy who's programmed by a woman who is, highly emotional, maybe a gossip and blames other people, and that's the programming. So that becomes normal
control.
In his brain, right? That's
right.
Normal. Your normal is structure. His normal is chaos.
Right.
Hence the bad check, the stop sign, says nothing's his fault. And that was the beginning of a lot of your fights, wasn't it? That nothing was his fault. Right?
Yes. Yeah, we always had to take responsibility, and that just wasn't happening.
That's right. So you have two kids with him, and then who divorces who?
He divorces me.
He divorces you.
It was mutual, but he happened to file paperwork first.
Okay. All right, so you're fed up with him, he's fed up with you, the boys go through the trauma, et cetera, now you're a single mother. Then
Correct.
You meet another guy from a foreign country, and is what? What? Tell me about his programming.
He's
a chaos kid. Now, you don't know that either, right?
He's a chaos kid.
Okay, tell me about, he has a specially interesting programming in his childhood that programmed his brain to be this chaos kid.
He does, and I put him way low on the scale of chaos kids, down around that, real close to chaos, not even near the 50% mark.
Okay.
But he grew up in a family in South Africa, one of the most violent places on the face of the planet, near Johannesburg. His mother worried constantly. It was never a down moment. She never got a moment to stop worrying, but it's a very violent country. But she got that worry from someone else, and that someone else is her mother, who also spent a lot of time with the grandkids. And that time they spent together was spent shaping and molding those grandbabies into God-fearing individuals. But in the midst of creating these God-fearing young men to send them off into the world, she programmed them in a way that I find to be abusive, but what happened is she would literally say, if you misbehave, God will. And she used that against them, and God will strike down your parents, and God will create problems and trouble.
Oh, what a church to grow up in, huh?
Oh, my.
What a church. What a church to grow up in.
So he has great paranoia, great fear, a lot of anxieties.
Lots,
and you meet him as an adult, man. But when you meet him, he doesn't show you any of that, does he?
You know, once you know it's there, I think you can go back and see little hints of it.
Yes,
but no,
yes.
I married a dark-haired, olive-complected, tall man. Again, I go back to the physical traits. Who had a fantastic accent. Fun and humorous and smart.
But once again, the actual programming of what you're actually going to marry was buried. Right?
It's buried.
Buried. Now, once you get married, finally, and you start living in the same home, and he's living with your two sons, with you, you start to see things. Now, what do you start to see? Describe this, because I want people to understand how that childhood experience, that programming set of brain instructions, now comes out to produce his daily behavior. So talk about what you saw.
It's the guilt. I mean, you can see the panic and paranoia that comes out where he repeats things and breathes real heavy and starts to hyperventilate. And it's all the guilt that he feels. It's the guilt from grandma that says that if you're not doing something correct, you should feel guilty and you should feel bad, and something terrible is going to happen from not doing something well. But if he did not shut the shower curtain when he got out of the shower, he felt guilt throughout the day. As he drove to work, he would think back, did I shut the curtain? And the guilt would come in. If he unloaded the dishwasher and he did not unload correctly or the way I wanted it unloaded, the guilt would set in. Did he put the pots in the right order? You know, were the spoons upside or downside or sideways?
That's a great picture. Now, talk about what you heard him say. How did he express all of this anxiety and guilt and fear? And how did you see it? How did you experience it? What did it sound like?
I'm sorry.
So he's saying, I'm sorry a lot.
Really, the only sentence I can remember that happened thousands and thousands and thousands of times. Sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. And it never stopped. And it got to a point where I refused to accept apologies. Where I was just going to stand up and say, I'm not accepting him anymore. I don't think you're wrong. I will not accept an apology for no reason.
All right. Now, you had no idea that the childhood programs were creating this.
None.
None. Okay.
None. I thought he was crazy.
You wondered, why don't you simply understand? Simply just don't feel guilty anymore. Just stop it.
I said, just stop it. I said, there's nothing wrong with that. Yeah, just put the dishes away.
Now, he didn't hear. He didn't hear you. No matter what you said, he didn't hear you. And, Robin, this is the point I want to make. Right, Debbie, he didn't hear you, right? He could not hear your message. Just stop it.
Yeah, I was speaking a foreign language.
Okay. Robin, what I'm stopping to make this point here is that you can tell a person to not be what these programs make them be. They can't hear you.
They do
now,
not
it's
hear
so me. Strange. You're speaking the same language. You're speaking slowly. You're speaking calmly, but the person with the programs cannot hear you.
They cannot.
Isn't that scary?
Even when you're speaking from the heart and you're doing
from
it with
heart,
love and care, they don't hear it.
Don't hear you. Scary, scary thought. Now, let's go to how you treated him, because you are the massive organization program. How did you, with your programming, treat him?
This was a good one. I treated him just like my mom treats everything. It's business. It's not really, I say it's not personal, but business is very close to my heart and very personal for me. But I wanted everything fixed and straightened out and organized. And so I was a wealth of information of tasks and check marks and little boxes and sticky notes and little things that would organize his thoughts and eliminate the sorry and the guilt and produce positive thinking and poof, he would just be able to follow my very well-planned instructions and we could take care of business just like that.
And in you're trying to fix him only made him worse.
Is that true?
It made him feel incapable.
Right, okay.
And
completely
so,
incapable.
Yeah,
so
I see it now.
His program behavior continued and your program behavior continued. He continued to feel guilty, you continued to fix.
And the more I fixed him, the more he thought he wasn't doing it right himself, so the more guilt he felt.
Mm-hmm. And neither of you had a clue what was happening to you?
Neither one. Not one single clue.
What's really fascinating is one day, her second husband gets on a plane and flies back to his country to live with his mother.
Wow.
No warning, no signs, nothing, right,
Deb? Just gone.
Just gone. Called me on a Thursday and...
And that's when Debbie and I started working together. And so, just starting with what we had, Debbie thought this was a normal man, you know, we started slowly getting into the stories. And that's how Debbie started to discover this. But what she wanted to do was win him back and get him to come back. Because, you know, there were financial connections and everything else.
Oh, sure.
Married, you know, complications, right? And so she had to talk to him, but he couldn't and wouldn't talk to her. In fact, all he would do when he talked to her was talk to her like a pen pal, and that's exactly where Debbie started. So, Debbie, talk about how that happened then. When you started to, we planned that you start to talk to him like a pen pal so you can actually start to make him feel safe enough to want to actually, you know, get out of this great paranoia and so on, so he can at least be civil with you. Well, tell me what happened.
Well, yeah, that's a discovery of your programs first. So once I figured out I was a fixer and that people are not fixed or they're not organized, you know, put into files. When I figured that out and that I was no longer fixing, we had to start from the very beginning and start with the traffic is nice and the weather is good and how about those Phoenix Suns basketball team. You could see that was the only thing he could muster up to not feel guilty over,
mm-hmm.
To speak of anything other than traffic or the weather would just overwhelm him with the guilt. The guilt would just get so much for him. And so I think he just protected himself and took it right down to the very minimal amount that you can communicate without feeling guilt or paranoia or anxiety.
And initially, this was very hard on you to talk to your husband like a pen pal.
Oh, it's not him. We're not talking about traffic. We're talking about the mess that is left over.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, now, it was a very strange.
As condensed as you can make it, go from this pen pal relationship that you were having across continents, and how you, the more we started to talk, the more you started to realize how human beings are wired and where behavior comes from. And you started to see things. And talk about what happened as you started to see things and become aware of things you were never aware of, how that changed how you started to talk to him and what he did in response.
As we started to talk, and of course when I had conversations with you and we started to dig out programs, I think you walk down this memory lane and you start to look through the things that you did in the past. And things just start to fall into place. Like I noticed that I'm a fixer. I also have fantastic programs as well. You know, I can talk to many different types of people from many different cultures and understand them. And so you find out all these wonderful things about yourself. And in the meantime, you start to remember those memories that you had with your husband or whomever. And you start to unfold their past as well. And the moment I saw Gary in a different way, the moment I saw his programs and they were revealed, was the moment I felt empathy. In my past, I would actually say the words that I don't empathize with those that are undeserving. And by deserving, I meant, you know, a mom in a car driving home from a second shift and a drunk driver hits her. She deserves empathy, but nobody else does. It's got to be something deserving. And today, when I see the way he was raised and I see the programs that he's been toting around on his back for so many years, it's nothing but empathy. And I think the moment I figure out how to empathize with people and just know that it was the way they were taught and it's the things they bring into their new adult life, that was the biggest change. And it's all about me. I thought I wanted to change him and I thought I wanted to fix him and I thought I wanted him back, and I thought I wanted to mend a marriage, and I mended me. And I empathize with everybody I meet I can empathize with. And I think that's where forgiveness comes, or that's where acceptance comes. And
Now I want to make a point here, Robin, that this is a highly functional lady who is, 100%, purpose kid.
Yeah, it's a very intelligent young lady as I'm listening to her. I'm quite impressed.
Life, no matter what
yes.
she does, right?
Right.
So here we have, most people aren't purpose kids. Most aren't. So she is, and what's Debbie's biggest problem? Well, she's a fixer because she was programmed by a great CEO to be a great CEO.
Sure.
And as a CEO, what Debbie did is she went around and fixed pretty much everybody.
Sure, just get her done, you know.
Yes, isn't that true?
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about how you're programmed to fix people what that actually did and how you see things differently now. Because you were saying today that the word is empathy. But in the old days, it was fixing people.
It was fixing.
So who got in the realm of your fixing program?
Everybody. I have a nickname for myself now, but in the past, nobody could come to me with any deep, heartfelt issues, because they had learned a very good lesson that if you wanted to confide in Debbie, beware, because she will tell you exactly what's wrong and how to make it right. And so I nicknamed myself the Samurai because I stand up straight. I always face you. I will never come at you from the back. And you will always see my big, shiny, long sword right out in front. And I just want people to know, you either come in and agree with me, or I will fix your problem.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so people are scared of me, and not until much later, and I'm talking in the last four to 5 months, have I had people from everywhere in my life, from my family to really good friends, including my first ex-husband, have they come back to me now. And they confide in me, and they feel incredibly safe and secure talking to me and telling me things that I'm not going to turn around and tell them exactly what's wrong with them, because there's nothing wrong with them.
And now they feel safe with you. And so safe being a family member, being a friend, being a confidant. And how does that make you feel, Debbie?
I can remember the first time it happened. I was with my mom, and I had a conversation with her, and it lasted almost 3 to 4 hours, and I think I emailed Larry right after the phone call. But it was like a 3 or 4 hour phone call with my mother, and my mother confessed that she was scared of me.
Wow.
That she had worried about the firestorm that would come after she had opened herself up to me. And, you know, we had talked at length about, she's carrying a few extra pounds she doesn't want, and she's depressed about that. She's got very low self-worth at the moment, and something fell off right at the end, and she finally let me into that. She let me know that she sees it, and she worries about it, and that she wants a friend in that.
Uh-huh.
You know, a person that she can talk to. And that was not me, never before.
And you were a friend, and you didn't try to fix her or the problem that she had. You just were a friend, and how awesome is that for your mom? Isn't that interesting that she, the CEO, giving you the programming, turned around and found out that you were her on steroids?
Good program.
I like on steroids.
So that long call was long because you had changed the environment between you.
Yeah, I created a space around me that was no longer a samurai. Yeah, it's just welcoming. I don't have defenses and sticky notes and file folders waiting for people.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll be continuing our conversation with Debbie and Larry Bellotta and the Chaos Kid.
With the divorce rate so high, many organizations and coaches are doing all they can to help couples solve their marriage troubles. One of the most unique programs available brings together a list of benefits that both men and women find highly attractive, and it offers real help for marriages.
The program is called The Fulfilled Couple. What makes it so unique are these 20 reasons why The Fulfilled Couple is a better key to rebuilding a struggling marriage.
First, there are no office visits, and a live coach works with you by phone. It's multimedia. The content is delivered through video, reading, listening, and live private calls.
You build your marriage at home. 88% of couples report a reduction in tension. 72% of couples report seeing each other in a different way. Husbands perform more services for their wives.
Oh, you like that. Well, here's one. Wives find sexual attraction to their husbands.
Mm-hmm.
Couples learn how to eliminate their negative feelings in just 60 seconds, and both see self-confidence increase.
Children become more emotionally stable, and no one becomes the bad guy. It removes blame from both spouses.
That's a plus. The program works with the way the brain and emotions perform. It simplifies complex ideas with pictures. It's 90% less than the cost of a wedding and 90% less than the cost of a divorce.
It keeps wealth in the family. It has a clear beginning and a clear end.
And reason 20?
The author of this program has been married 34 years.
Now, what marriage program can do all that? Watch the video at FulfilledCouple.com and see for yourself.
That's FulfilledCouple.com. Welcome back as we continue our conversation with Larry Bellotta and Debbie and the Chaos Kid Effect.
Now, Debbie, because you're a single mom, you know, everybody knows that being a single mother is no easy task.
Mm-mm.
And you have two sons, and is 13 and 10 now? Is that right?
Right, 14 and 10.
14 and 10. And two boys. I think if any single moms are listening to this, I would like to talk about, you know, we talked about you changing environment for people because you have this empathy now, this release of tension, this release of pressure, that people are now safer with you. Tell me how the boys were affected by this great change in you.
Yeah, of course, as a mom, you just think your kids are perfect and it's all ready. But once you know, once you understand how to see your own programs, you then start to see other people's programs. They just sort of reveal themselves. You know what you're looking for, and so you can just watch. You see that, you know, those pictures with the hidden three-dimensional photos inside of them?
Yes.
They just pop right out at you. And I was watching my kids. I've got one, my older son, who is he's a hard personality, and he's just like me. He's organized. He's critical. He knows everything. And then my little one, he's 10. He is so sensitive. He's brilliant. He's so social. He hears and takes everything to heart. My older one hears, and I know it's going into his heart, but there's just no way he's going to show that. It's filed away, nice and neat. And when I saw that, I thought, you know, there's going to be a blend that we have to come out here with. Because being so on either side isn't going to help us out. And I want my older one to understand where his programs come from and my little one to know. And so we started activities in the house that would force us, make us, to see our programs and acknowledge where they came from. Because we didn't want anybody else to be responsible for our feelings. We wanted ourselves to choose those feelings and then be happy and successful when we choose the feeling that we want.
Now, I want you to say something about, because this is leading up to this, you created an idea, which I thought was just brilliant, of each of the boys drawing their own picture of themselves, their own image of themselves.
Right.
And talk about how you did that. That was an amazing effect.
Well, we drew pictures, all three of us did. We took time. I found a moment in a day that was easygoing for each child. Nobody had tension. Nobody was upset, and I gave them anything they wanted to draw, and their pictures are beautiful. My oldest is in black and white and very sketched out with music and trendy clothes. My youngest one is bright and colorful and fun, real energetic. And after we got done with the photos of ourselves, I told them to put their heart into them. I said, when I look at this picture, I want you to know that you drew it of yourself. And they felt so good and so proud when they finished. At the end, we covered the picture. We drew words all around ourselves on the outside edge. And those words were the things that we liked the most about ourselves, that were hopeful, that were honest, that we, our pride, our joy.
So what would be an example of some of the words the kids wrote?
Well, like joy and honesty and pride and happiness, thoughtfulness, trust.
So these are positive words they felt described them.
All positive words.
And they were all around the outside edge of their self-portrait.
Of their self-portraits. And
okay.
So when we finished, we shared our pictures with everybody. We let everyone see that these things mean the most to us. And then I explained that in the future, if they were to choose between two ways to treat each other, and one choice is to treat another person with respect by not taking his iPod out of his room and using it, or by not taking someone's, drink and spilling it, or throwing gum in their cup. I mean, there's tons of things these boys can do.
Okay.
And so, I said, each time we make a choice between doing that or doing the very positive, good-natured things that we want to do by encouragement, then we've got to look at our pictures. And so when they chose something negative to do, and there was one, my oldest son had decided that he would take his little brother's soccer ball and puncture it because he wanted to play with it, and the little one said, no, you can't borrow my soccer ball, and so we've got to destroy the soccer ball. If I can't play with it, nobody can play with it.
Okay.
We made a decision. I asked the little one, Levi, I said, go get your poster, go get your picture, and he brings it out, and I said, give it to Colton. So Colton had to take that picture, look at his perfect drawing that Levi was so proud of, and Levi's sitting there whimpering because his ball is destroyed, and Colton has this picture in front of him. And I told him at that point, I said, now, is your brother going to trust you? Is he going to be motivated by you? What's he going to be? Because you just took that away from him, and I don't want that to be taken away from his little brother. But what ended up happening is that he did take that. That's what happens when we react to people in a very negative way and do things that don't, it's just the wrong choice. But those posters represent us choosing not to take our hope away, choosing not to take our trust away from each other. And so when there's a choice to be made, we simply bring out our posters and we decide.
And you did a daring thing then. You said to Colton, now that you want to take something from your brother, cut out one of the words that you don't want him to be. Cut it out of his picture, right?
Right.
And
so he
now
cut out his happiness because his little brother was sad and crying, really upset over his soccer ball.
So Colton, go ahead and destroy this picture by cutting out the happiness from his self-portrait. And
yeah,
now
he literally had
to
take the scissors to it. He literally had to take the scissors to his brother's portrait and remove his happiness, like he was performing some surgery, and remove the happiness from his brother.
And what did Colton do then? Now, Colton's, 14 years old now, the rebellious teenager and all that, never wrong. What did he do when you told him, go ahead and cut out his happiness?
He asked if he could not do it, and that if he could apologize. He didn't want to. You could see he went, oh, no, I want to go back in time, and I want to make a new decision, because I do not want to touch his poster.
Robin, isn't this brilliant? His
happiness. He still had to take the happiness out, because the deed was done. We put the happiness square. We have a jar in the kitchen, and it's where we put, it's called Freddy's Belly, and it's where we put those good things on our poster, and they get to sit in this rotting, acid-filled belly of Freddy, just eating away at it. Mm-hmm. And I explain every time, I said, you cannot let your brother go the rest of his life without happiness. You just can't. I never told him how to mend, but they figured it out all on their own. About 2 days later, he stuck his hand down in Freddy's belly and ripped out the happiness from Freddy, and very neatly, very nicely taped it back onto Levi's poster.
That's what I was waiting to hear.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It took him
so
a little while,
great.
But he figured it out on his own.
This is amazing.
Isn't this amazing?
It truly is. And I hope that all of our listeners are taking notes here, and we'll come back and revisit this part of the program over and over again, especially in dealing with their children. It's really amazing, Debbie. I'm quite impressed.
So, Debbie,
it's worked well.
You're calm now, calm, feeling safe, no longer fixing broken people. Your boys change. You changed the environment for those boys, didn't you?
It did. It really did. I mean, it's not like it's this perfect picture, but we all understand choice, and we all understand that it's completely 100% our choice, and that people's actions around us never make us react. We simply choose. And so even though someone angers us or frustrates us, we still say anger or happiness. We choose between those two things now, because if we choose anger back, then we've got to accept that we're going to rip something out of another person. We're going to take their happiness. We're going to take their hope, their motivation, their enthusiasm, and we just refuse to make the choice of taking somebody else's enthusiasm.
Now, let me go back full circle back to the chaos to purpose scale. The chaos to purpose scale says once you're programmed, you are not aware. You are not aware of the programs you have. And so if you're going to destroy somebody, the older brother is destroying the younger brother, in programming, you don't know you're destroying another person. So what happened when Debbie became an environment changer, she changed her entire environment, and everyone who came near it was affected by it. Most obviously her sons were affected by it. See, they knew the right thing to do, and what she did is she took this chaos to purpose idea, and she made her boys aware. And then to make them extra aware as kids, she used these drawings to create full awareness of them every day. And if they ever go back into their programs, she has these self-portraits again with all these characteristics and the reminder of, do you want to cut out something near and dear to your brother, But that's awareness. And if you think about teenagers, the rebellious culture, right? Teenagers are rebellious by any measurement you want to use.
They just are.
But what really is a teenager except a person who is not aware of the needs of other people? Now, where does that come from? It comes from the parents who raise that person, who are also not aware. They are asleep at the wheel. And I hear this day in and day out. Men, most notably, the most unaware people of relationships, totally unaware, never interested in taking a course on women, for example. No interest, doesn't even feel the need. And that's a low, low awareness. And what I love about Debbie's story is even though she's a purpose kid, she had something that actually could create tension, even though she was a purpose kid.
Mm-hmm.
It could create tension in people. And as you look at how Debbie, would go around and affect friends, family, coworkers, etc. Sure enough, she did create tension, even to the point of creating fear in her own mother.
Right.
Because she was not aware. So that's why the chaos to purpose scale, like I said in our last interview, Robin, I want to plaster it on every bathroom in the country.
Right. Debbie, I must tell you, I love your story. I have a 13-year-old boy. And so I can understand your oldest son's, where he was coming from. And the black and white, very strong self-portrait kind of goes back to that control, like
right.
Mom, the programming from Mom. And he sees himself things very black and white. The younger son, just a little more carefree in the colors and probably not quite so boxy picture and that. Very
exactly.
Telling, very telling, as you're explaining this and I'm listening. Being an outsider from the very beginning of your story, I could already see where things were going to fall into place. When you're so close to it and you're living it, you don't know that these programs are running, and it is an invisible program that starts into place. And then we see it in our youngsters, what's happening with them. But as you're telling it from the outside, I could just see right where you were going with this. And it's amazing when you get an outsider's view, or in Larry's case, a coach that sees this and helps you with your education and information, just how much it changes your life. That's just amazing. You've changed your entire almost personality.
Everything around me.
Yeah.
Everything.
I don't want to let this
interview go because in our last interview, Robin, we talked about the Mother Lode program.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to hear Debbie's Mother Lode program and why, you know, this is the Mother Lode program of marriage, which is, you know, where does the master program for marriage reside? Well, it resides when you ask this question. This is how you find it. How did your mother show you to treat a man by the way she treated your father? And that's the question that I asked Debbie. And here is Debbie's Mother Lode program from her first 10 years,
okay,
programmed into her brain about how to be married.
Okay.
Here it is. Love and serve and give to your man no matter what it takes. That's her program. And that's what she did in the way she was programmed to do it. And whether a man is ready for it or whether he's not.
But that's what he's getting because that's what he married.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, she was a server, giver, no matter what it takes, and combined with the fixing program, that's why Debbie was what she was.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Debbie, talk about your future. Your husband is still a struggling guy, right? And I think you are. Is the marriage over now?
Legally, the paperwork is not finalized, but the paperwork is sitting in the courthouse as we speak.
Okay. So I want you to talk about, now that you are an environment changer, how do you see men now? How do you see men today?
Like I said before, it's strange how programs tend to pop out, how the questions that you ask people tend to differ a little bit. You know, you don't know what's your favorite movie, what do you like to do for fun? Those questions don't necessarily come up in the same way. You know, questions like, are your parents still married? that's a great question. You know, you start to want to know different things about people. But today I have to say that once you know where you're at or what you do and why you do the things you do, why you react to people the way you do, I think now I'm really confident that I can see a very chaotic person walking towards me, because I think the first words from highly chaotic people are blaming and victim-type statements.
Yeah,
and so I think today I can see programs so much better, my own programs included. So no longer do I, no matter what, anything. I'm much more flexible. It's not about my ideas and only mine and not sharing or inviting somebody else to be part of me. Now it's about three separate programs, and that's the lover program in me, and that's a very interactive, communicative program. And then I've got the nurturer. And that's with my kids, about being open and honest and revealing their choices so that they know they can be open and honest and flexible. And then I've got my entrepreneur program, and they're all separate now. And that's where I get to have the fun organizing with sticky notes and files and stuff. And I keep it in my company and in business and work. And so I still haven't changed that. I'm still the fixer organizer. It's just I know where to put it today.
And how to apply it in your life. Debbie, this is, wanted to ask you, then you feel that maybe you can see a chaos kid heading into your direction. Do you run and scream and go the other way? Are you just more accepting because you feel more comfortable now with who you are and more confident in seeing all of the wonderful good things about yourself and your family? Just allows you a certain amount of comfort and confidence and not too concerned at this point if the papers get filed, if they don't, or where you want to go from there.
Yeah, I don't run from chaos people. I know I can see it. I know I can feel it when they come near me, just by certain, you know, just the verbiage that you use when you're not as positive,
mm-hmm,
and you don't have the good feelings. But no, never run from them. I give them a compliment.
There you go.
I simply give them a wind of something very nice, something very kind, something very encouraging. And you watch them, you watch their face change.
It lights up,
instantly.
Doesn't it? Yes, yes.
It does. I make a very, we do several things that are mandatory in our house, and that does sound like the fixer or the organizer in me. But we have standards, and one of them is to pick up trash when we see it walking to the bus. Another one is to put the grocery carts in the grocery cart corral, mm-hmm, and not in the back of somebody's car. You know what I mean? It's just common courtesy.
It is common courtesy. Yep, it is common courtesy, and something that we see, unfortunately, lacking very much these days, even in the church.
A big way.
Yes.
And we want people to see us do it. I know it sounds a little bit like we're tooting our own horn, but we don't want a compliment for it. We don't want a pat on the back for it, but we do want people to see us doing it, because I want those boys to know that when people watch you, mm-hmm. and they're aware of you, and you do those things, that you're changing somebody's life.
You are. You're paying it forward.
It or not.
Yes.
They could go home and feel a different way. But we also do one other thing, and we compliment. And so there's not one checker at my local grocery store that hasn't heard, love your hair, cute nails, you're quick.
Find something positive. Absolutely. And that's not tooting your own horn, Debbie. That goes to the empathy that you have learned to make somebody's day a little bit nicer, a little bit brighter. Somebody noticed. And I'm a big believer in this. I practice this every day myself, and it's just been a training process. You have no idea how it affects people. I've had a checker that I see at a local store. I've seen her for about the last 3 years, off and on, and I hadn't seen her for 6 months. I happened to run into her at the store. I said, oh my gosh, you're still here. I missed you. I hadn't seen you in a while. This lady was just absolutely flabbergasted that anybody even noticed her. And I said, oh yes, I've seen you for the last 3 years. I kind of wondered if you were still working here. And she gave herself a pat on the back saying, oh my gosh, somebody actually saw me. And I was just dumbfounded that apparently this woman doesn't get a whole lot of positive input.
She has a very invisible program somewhere
right,
in there.
Right, and so it's kind of the Eeyore complex, thanks for noticing me. But I'm a big believer in this, Debbie, so that is terrific.
Robin, I want to point out that you and Debbie are both purpose kids raised high on the purpose side of the chaos to purpose scale.
I could see it, and as I'm listening to her, I'm going, yep. I'm not nearly as organized, and sometimes wish that I were, but yes, very high on the purpose scale. My folks were fantastic. My dad was very involved, and so I can see that as Debbie's speaking.
So since we know that chaos to purpose, the chaos world produces adults who produce children, who put more chaos into them, mm-hmm. who grow up, who are filled with chaos, who have children, who pour their chaos into them, and this is why it goes generation to generation. What is keeping this country together? What's keeping it together is purpose kids who marry purpose kids and produce purpose kids. That's what's saving this country.
Right.
That's what's holding it together.
Mm-hmm.
It is, Jesus said, the poor will always be with you. I think that's quite a fatalistic statement, isn't it?
It does, yeah.
Right? The poor will always be with you. Well, that's really good to know, Jesus. I'm really excited about that idea. You'll never wipe out poverty is his point, right? Because we'll always have chaos people, right? And he said, the poor will always be with you. He wasn't talking to chaos kids.
Mm-hmm.
He was talking to people of purpose.
Of purpose.
And what's their purpose? To take care of the poor. And who is poor? The chaos kids are poor. You want to see chaos kids up close and personal? Turn on daytime television. Watch Judge Judy, okay? The Judge Judy show has nothing but a whole string of chaos kids going from case to case to case. And you get to hear about their problems. I'm on disability. I don't have a job. I've changed jobs 5 times in the last year. This is the chaos kid world.
Mm-hmm.
And you get to see them right there on television.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can watch Jerry Springer and the whole place is full of chaos kids. so that's what's holding this country together.
Yeah.
So, Debbie, thank you very, very much for opening up like this and telling this story. I'm so glad we were able to record this. Thank you, Robin. This has been great.
Debbie, you are awesome. I must tell you.
Yeah, Debbie, awesome.
Absolutely. Awesome.
Thank you.
Debbie, you'll always be an inspiration.
We're going to take a quick break here, but please come back so you can hear a little bit more about Larry Bellotta and get the information on where to reach him or how to find him on the websites to help your marriage.
We're accidentally in love.
Accidentally. With the divorce rate so high, many organizations and coaches are doing all they can to help couples solve their marriage troubles. One of the most unique programs available brings together a list of benefits that both men and women find highly attractive, and it offers real help for marriages.
The program is called The Fulfilled Couple. What makes it so unique are these 20 reasons why The Fulfilled Couple is a better key to rebuilding a struggling marriage.
First, there are no office visits, and a live coach works with you by phone. It's multimedia. The content is delivered through video, reading, listening, and live private calls.
You build your marriage at home. 88% of couples report a reduction in tension. 72% of couples report seeing each other in a different way. Husbands perform more services for their wives.
Oh, you like that. Well, here's one. Wives find sexual attraction to their husbands.
Mm-hmm.
Couples learn how to eliminate their negative feelings in just 60 seconds, and both see self-confidence increase.
Children become more emotionally stable, and no one becomes the bad guy. It removes blame from both spouses.
That's a plus. The program works with the way the brain and emotions perform. It simplifies complex ideas with pictures. It's 90% less than the cost of a wedding, and 90% less than the cost of a divorce.
It keeps wealth in the family. It has a clear beginning and a clear end.
And reason 20?
The author of this program has been married 34 years.
Now, what marriage program can do all that? Watch the video at FulfilledCouple.com and see for yourself.
That's FulfilledCouple.com. Welcome back. And Larry, you always have so much interesting information. We're going to wrap this up very shortly, but please stay tuned as Larry gives us his website addresses and some more insights into his marriage program.
What we have here is whether a person's a purpose kid or a chaos kid, raised on the purpose side, raised on in the first 10 years on the chaos side. Regardless of where people are, the mission here is to know how you were programmed. And the way you know how you're programmed, or the first step I'd like to say, is to Google the words invisible lifestyle. I-N-V-I-S-I-B-L-E. Invisible lifestyle. L-I-F-E-S-T-Y-L-E. Just enter that in Google, and you will find a report called Invisible Lifestyle. You download that report and read it. And that is the beginning of learning about being programmed in those first 10 years and how it stays with you the rest of your life, literally steering you into choices and decisions that you don't even realize why you're making. So as you learn about the invisible lifestyle, this is a great first place to learn it. The next step in learning about the invisible lifestyle is learning about becoming an environment changer. And there's two ways to become an environment changer. You could do it as a couple, especially if your marriage is struggling. That is through a program called FulfilledCouple.com. And at FulfilledCouple.com, at that website, you'll learn about Marriage 101, which is the first step of that program. And that is how you'll learn what Peter learned, what Debbie learned. And that's a live, interactive, 8-hour phone call delivered process that takes place over a month. And then the second way is you've got a marriage that is so degraded that one spouse will not go for any help, does not want to talk about help, does not want to recover the marriage, wants to just run away as far and fast as possible. And the person left behind is what I call the stayer. And if you are one of these people, you can plan a no-cost half hour with me if you submit your story to what I call the Second Chance Program. Does your marriage deserve a second chance? And the way you enter that is through marriage-success-secrets.com. Marriage-success-secrets.com. And there you'll learn about the Second Chance Program. And if you enter your story there, then be able to be considered for talking to a half hour and hear more in depth about your, I could hear more about your situation and what you're facing. And that's for one spouse who has another spouse who is wants nothing to do with repairing the marriage. So whether you're a couple, which is FulfilledCouple.com, or whether you're a lone spouse who's been abandoned by a very, very angry or frustrated or unhappy spouse, then it becomes marriage-success-secrets.com. So those two ways are ways to get a hold of me and find out about these two approaches to becoming an environment changer, which is what Peter in our interview did, and what Debbie in our interview did.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much, Larry, for the information. We look forward to next week's program.
Here's what we're going to do. For our next interview, we've got a guy. He was actually raised with violence, and he, his wife, and he split up and by a restraining order, a legal restraining order. And what's so interesting about David is he's a very good man with a very bad program, which is true of a lot of men who are violent. This next look is not just an anger, but a violence program, which, of course, is against the law, hence the restraining order. But I'd like him to talk about how he discovered his programs and how he got his life back because of it.
Oh, cool. Thank you so much, Larry, and to Larry's special guest, Debbie Burnt. We really enjoyed hearing her story, and we appreciate her sharing that with us. Stay tuned. Next week, we'll be talking with David, and David's marriage, as it was dissolving, also involved a restraining order. You'll want to listen to that next Saturday. Please don't miss it. And again, this is Robin Johnston for Christian Family Matters, because your Christian family matters.
We're accidentally in love.